Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. On today's show, I'll be presenting another in my Health Challenges series. My guest is John Simon. Simon is well known in our region as a DJ at WVBR, a singer-songwriter and performer with bands such as Radio London, and he's also spent many years working in school programs and on community projects such as the Hangar Theater Project 4 and the Family Reading Partnership's Read Along Songs. But in 2013, he was suddenly diagnosed with serious heart conditions that required immediate open heart surgery, and we'll discuss his medical journey. Thank you for joining us to talk about this, John.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for asking me in.
I want to begin with what you wrote on your little sheet where you gave me some information about your journey. And it said that back in 2010, you were forewarned in a way by being diagnosed with high blood pressure, but you just sort of let it slip.
Right.
And it wasn't until 2013 that you really needed to deal with this. So tell us what happened.
Yeah. I've always had a really good, strong heart. I work with kids and I'm a musician, so I have lots of sort of heart therapy going on in just my lifestyle. And I eat pretty well. My wife's a vegan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an omnivore, but you know, I'm in pretty good health. So when the doctor told me that my blood pressure was running high, I sort of rolled my eyes and went back a couple years later, and he told me again and asked me to come back in the following week to get it just checked by one of the nurses. So again, I sort of rolled my eyes internally, but I thought I'd do it. And I stopped at the office, asked for somebody to take my blood pressure, and they had not gotten the memo or something. And they say, well, we can't do it right now. Can you come back some other time? At that point, my time being valuable, you know, I left and went home and didn't think about it again for a couple of years.
And so tell us what happened. You were on your way to Watkins Glen
to do a school job. And it was very snowy out. It was one of the first real snowy days. And I was running a little bit late, and I took an alternate route, which probably wasn't a great idea. And I got stuck behind a truck, a slow-moving truck, that was throwing slush on my windshield. And I could just feel, like, the anxiety starting to build. And I started to feel, like, this pain in my chest. And I thought, well, yeah, I'm anxious. You know, I want to get there on time. I don't know these kids yet. When is this truck ever going to pull over? You know, it's a very long road that I don't know, so I don't know when you can pass.
But the pain continued.
It did. It continued through that whole day. And so when I got home, I told my partner about it, and she said, well, we should contact the doctors. And they have an online way to do that now. So we sent a thing, and immediately, like within the next day or so, got back a thing saying, come in Monday morning and you'll see somebody.
And so on, you know, it was January 21st of 2013, you suddenly got this diagnosis of AFib, high blood pressure. And you were told you immediately had to go in for more testing, right?
Yeah, they wanted to refer me to a cardiologist right away. So, and they gave me the name, and the woman at the office helped me make an appointment. And I went in. I guess the very first thing they wanted to do was an echocardiogram.
Yeah.
Where they can kind of see what's going on in there. And so I went in, and Lynn came with me, and this guy started taking pictures, you know, rubbing thing over my chest.
Yeah. It's fascinating, those echocardiograms.
Yeah.
You can just watch yourself be alive.
Yeah, and I didn't know what it was, but I could see,
you
know, things happening on the screen. And after about 15 minutes, the guy said, I think I'd better go see the cardiologist. I'll be right back.
Yeah, that's a sign.
And when he left, I was like, I wonder if they always do that. And of course they don't.
No, especially if the guy sounded panicked. So a long story short, you had two valves that were leaking profusely, and you know, you were probably in great peril. And prior to that, they put you on blood thinners even, right, because of the AFib.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's serious enough.
Yeah, with AFib, they want to make sure that you don't
have a clot. Yeah. So they revealed two badly damaged leaking valves and told you you had to have heart surgery.
I would have to have heart surgery.
Tell me how you felt when you first heard that. Was it like the blood pressure thing? Did you not believe it at first?
Well, no, because we had empirical data, you know. We had these pictures on the machine. And for me, the whole experience was sort of like a little bit out of body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was listening to all this and it didn't really sink in. And he said open heart surgery. Then he said, but they have ways of doing it in a non-invasive way now.
Yeah.
And they can run a
catheter.
A catheter and, you know, do it. So I said, well, yeah, I'd love the non-invasive kind.
So few people are qualified for that still.
Right.
As you know now, I'm sure.
And he made it sound like it was, you know, that was my best chance, was that was going to happen. But what happened over the course of the next few weeks, I still had a really full work schedule, but I was more and more tired. And apparently I was starting to turn gray.
Like my God, John.
Yeah, my regular color was not there. And I really started to feel like exhaustion.
Uh-huh. Did you ever feel like you were going to faint? Because that's often a symptom, too.
Right. I never did. Until well after. And that's the sort of the postscript of this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that. But so when they told you you had to have heart surgery, I assume you had to go in for heart caths and MRIs and all those pre-tests.
Right.
And you know what kills me about that? They tell you you have to immediately have surgery, and then they put you through weeks of testing.
Yeah.
That's stressful as hell, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and they're drawing blood every couple of days.
Yeah. How did you deal with this, though? Because a perfectly healthy man, you know, I knew I had a heart problem from the time I was a little kid. I was born with it.
Oh, interesting.
So to be a totally healthy guy
and
suddenly have this happen, it must have been such a shock.
It was. It really blew my mind. And I have four kids, and they were, I mean, it really affected them. Because here I was, the dad, and all of a sudden I was this identified patient who was turning
gray and getting really weak looking, right?
Yeah, and could die, you know.
Yeah. Did you decide to do any of your own research? Because that's the first thing I always do when I hear about something that affects my life so grandly, you know. Did you start doing research to find out what these leaky valves, what it all meant?
I live with one of the truly great researchers in America.
Lynn.
Yeah. So Lynn absorbed the internet and followed up every lead she could and was a great source of info, and also was a great presence at all of my appointments.
Yeah.
She came for every blood drawing and every test, every MRI. Yeah.
And she also kept all of us in the community posted,
which I
thought was totally invaluable to all of us.
Which is,
You
know, being a sort of public figure, I had this funny thing, like, I should let people know what's going on. I don't want to be grandstanding, or I don't want to be going for the sympathy vote, but felt like I had a responsibility to kind of at least let people know what was going on.
Oh, I know, because you keep a vigorous schedule. You're always out there. And if you're suddenly not and looking quite weak, you know, people will want to know. Tell me, John, how did you tell your kids? Did you sit them all down together? Or did you call them? How'd you deal with it?
No, they were fairly scattered to the, you know, we only have one who was still at home at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Lynn probably contacted each of them individually. And as soon as my daughter Kenzie, who's the one at home, heard what was going on, she was on the phone with her sisters and her brother. So, yeah, we didn't have, like, one of these dramatic family meetings.
Yeah. But how did you reassure them, though? Because you guys must have been really scared, too.
Yeah, I was sort of in denial, I think. You know, to me, being right in the thick of it, I was like, all right, I'm tired. I'm not feeling like my regular self. But they're on it, and it'll be okay.
So the eternal optimist.
Yeah.
Now, this is a stress that a lot of people I have had on with any kind of illness. Open heart surgery is obviously incredibly expensive. Did you have to worry about the stress of your health insurance, how you would pay for this, and so on? How did you deal with that?
Yeah, it looked like insurance was going to cover it fine. And the first thing Lynn did when the doctor said you have to go for open heart surgery and we'll get you an appointment someplace, she asked the doctor, where would you send somebody if this was somebody in your family? And he, without missing a beat, said, the Cleveland Clinic, the best in the world.
The famous Cleveland Clinic, yeah.
So Lynn said, And I said, can we get in there? He said, sure, you can get in there. So that was like a great relief. And I remember going home and calling my mom and telling her, I'm going to the Cleveland Clinic. And we got paperwork from them a couple weeks later, and the name of the surgeon, Lynn did a web search, and this guy was world-renowned, the leader in the field.
God, everybody who needs medical help wants the best.
Yeah.
And did tell us what happened, though.
So, yeah, it was a great relief. And my mom kept saying, my son's going to be under the knife of the most famous surgeon. You know, it's sort of like my son the doctor, but different.
Yeah, yeah. And
then just a few days before we were supposed to head to Cleveland, Lynn, just kind of making sure there was no stone unturned, made one more call to the insurance people. And all of a sudden, they said, well, wait a minute. Yeah, that's out of network. The insurance company will not pay for you going to the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah, yeah. That is a story that I've heard so many times.
Yeah.
And not even just the Cleveland Clinic, in regard to where people would want to go in some ways.
Right.
You know?
And I had as this island of oasis in the distance, you know, this mirage of, on April 11th, I'm going to the Cleveland Clinic, and suddenly it was April 7th, and there was no place for me to go, and it was going to be, is this going to be another six-week wait?
Yeah, yeah. But you did finally get in.
Yeah.
To a more regional hospital. So, yeah. So on April 10th, you went off to meet your fate, and you got to the hospital, and they had to postpone the surgery, right? Because your blood was too thin.
Yeah.
Oh, God, this sounds so stressful.
Right. Yeah, it was. Well, the first thing is I had to wean myself off of the blood thinner by giving myself these injections in my belly with this other blood-thinning bridge thing.
Oh, my God.
And that was pretty intense because, you know, I'm kind of squeamish about needles anyway. And having to do it four times a day, I think it was.
And so you get to the hospital for the surgery and it's still not thin
enough.
Right,
yeah. Yeah.
Or it's too, your blood was too
My
thin,
blood
actually.
Was too thin.
That was it.
Yeah, it wouldn't clot under surgery. And at that point, I was so depleted and so worn down that I was just, you know, grasping at straws.
Oh, God. I know the stress around that, the whole buildup of, you know, not being able to go to Cleveland and then...
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did they kept you in the hospital for a couple of days and waited for your blood to...
They did.
Thicken up as they would...
And finally, that morning, they came in and they took my blood yet again, which they were doing at four-hour intervals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what it's like being in the hospital.
Yeah.
And overnight, all of a sudden, you know, you're being awakened because they're going to take your blood pressure and they're going to draw blood. But the nurse said, okay, you're ready to go. And it was such a relief.
But tell us, something startling happened when you had to have heart surgery twice that day. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, well, I went in, and I knew nothing. I mean, you know, they administered this anesthesia, and I was out like a light. But Lynn and my daughter Rosie had gotten a leave from her job down in Westchester County to be with her mom and with me. They finally were able to go to the store and get some food and just kind of like get out of the hospital. And a couple hours later, Lynn got a phone call on her cell phone and they said, it turns out that there's a lot of internal bleeding and we had just stitched him up. We have to open him up again and go and clean it up.
That is unbelievable.
So, and I knew nothing about any of this.
Of course, yeah.
But for my poor wife and my poor daughter.
And I bet the surgeons were panicked. What caused that? Did you ever find out? How did that happen?
I think partly it was due to the blood thinners, you know, so I just, there was a lot of debris that kind of was in there.
So, God, two surgeries. Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm talking to John Simon. This is one of my Health Challenges series, where we're talking about his sudden need for heart surgery in 2013, out of the blue, and this road he has been on since that transpired. So you ended up with two surgeries. The thing that makes me amazed about this whole story is you were out of the cardiac ICU just within a few days, even with all of this trouble.
Right.
So do you remember what that was like? Were you aware at all?
I do, yeah. Lynn keeps talking about what a great patient I was. And despite, like, all these setbacks and all this bad news and all this stuff, she was really impressed with how kind I was to everybody and how appreciative I was.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you, I think it really helped me in my recovery because people went out of their way to make sure that I was comfortable and that I was getting everything I needed mm-hmm. and beyond. I know a bunch of people who are just really crabby after surgery. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, and scared. A lot of people are scared being in hospitals.
That's maybe the source of the crabbiness.
You know, most healthy people haven't spent a lot of time in hospitals to begin with. So, you know, I was wondering, when you found out you had to have all this stuff, did you put yourself into a new mode? Did you go into any kind of a, I need to meditate on this and sort of go inward? Because that's what I ended up being able to do somehow, to calm myself down. Were you able to do that?
I don't know quite what I did. But, you know, I had to sort of brace myself for a whole different way of doing things. And I had all these jobs on the horizon. I had to tell the band guys, you know, after this date, I can't play any more Radio London shows or Yardvark shows.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there were a bunch of things that I had to take off my calendar, which was hard for me because I love what I do in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And but you felt optimistic, right? I mean, you never thought you weren't going to come through this.
Yeah, I knew that I was going to be okay, or I told myself I was. In retrospect, my family all says that they were each worried that they were going to lose me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was really scary for them.
Oh,
not so
I'm
much
sure.
for me. Being in the eye of the storm, I was sort of buffered from it.
Yeah, and out of it for the first few days,
right.
I'm sure. You know, I mean, they're the ones that had to hear the news. You had to go back into surgery again.
Right, exactly.
You know, and all these scary propositions that were taking place.
Yeah.
But in spite of this entire ordeal, which sounds absolutely phenomenal, you came home after 6 days.
Yeah.
Tell us what that was like. Were you back to somewhat to yourself?
No. Well, the very first thing that happened was they gave me my last dose of heavy-duty pain medication.
Mm.
And then it took a couple of hours for them to process me to send me home and get me my clothes back and stuff. And at that point, the medicine was going to wear off in about 2 hours. And from Rochester, with Lynn driving, it was about a 2.5-hour drive.
Wow.
And the way that New York State regulations work, they couldn't give me any more pain medication before I left. They couldn't give me any to go. And Wegmans couldn't process my prescription until they were holding the hard copy of the prescription slip.
Oh, my God, John. So you must have been in really bad pain.
That last 20 minutes of coming back into Ithaca, every little bump on the road, I just felt my entire body cringe.
Oh, my God.
It was really intense. And we got back, and then, of course, it was going to take Wegmans 20 minutes to get me to process the thing. So Lynn took me straight home, and I walked into a house where I hadn't lit a wood fire for 10 days. We heat with wood for the most part.
Uh-huh.
So the house was freezing. I was miserable. I was, at this point, I was really frightened, you know, because I didn't know what was going to happen next.
Wow.
In the hospital, there's 24/7 care, or, you know, around the clock, multiple nurses, everybody taking care of everything I needed. But suddenly there I was at home, and I couldn't do anything for myself. And Lynn wasn't there because she was picking up my prescription and getting some supplies in.
Did you think they let you go too soon? That sounds like a very strange...
Oh, I really wanted to be home. Yeah, I wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but...
And you know what I kept saying was, I am so relieved that we're not driving home from Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
how can you imagine what that would have been like?
2.5-hour drive as opposed to that 7-hour drive or whatever, I would have...
Yeah,
would have killed me.
That, it probably would have killed you.
Yeah.
Now let's go a little bit fast forward. The sure. journey wasn't over. Suddenly in November 2014, you start, you know, a year and a half after the surgery, you start having, what, fainting? I mean, your heart rate went down so low, you
yeah,
probably couldn't sustain life.
I was
life.
Back at work. I was doing all this stuff. And one day, I was driving home from work, and I suddenly felt myself get really woozy. And I called Lynn from the road, and I said, listen, I think I'd better go to the ER, and I'll be coming right by the house. I'll pick you up. So I drove us
oh my God.
To the emergency room. I had a banquet that night I was supposed to play, and I was a little scruffy. Got to the ER. They wheeled me in. They gave me an EKG. And all of a sudden, like, sirens and lights started going off. We need a doctor right away.
So literally sirens went off. It wasn't just them going, uh-oh.
Right. I mean, all of a sudden, about 10 people came converging upon me. Turns out that my heart rate was 10 beats per minute.
How are you still conscious?
I'm not sure. But, yeah, I mean, they just flipped out.
For people who don't know, the regular heart rate should be between 60 and 80
right.
in a you know, resting position like we're in right now. Wow.
But, yeah, a heartbeat of 10 is more like,
I can't believe you didn't faint.
That's two heartbeats in that conversation. Well,
you were probably caught just in time because you cannot sustain life with a 10 heart rate. So they rushed you into the operating room again, right?
Right. They rushed me in. They gave me an IV. They gave me all kinds of, you know, putting fluids in.
But they gave you conscious sedation, right? You didn't have anesthesia.
Yeah, no, I wasn't out. But I did tell the doctor, I said, listen, I just have to get home in time to shave before I go to work tonight.
You couldn't go to work that night,
no,
could you?
Yeah, no, okay. No. They kept me for the next 6 days.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
At that point, they said, you need a pacemaker installed.
So at first they were just monitoring you to see if your heart rate would come back somehow?
They were controlling it with medication. You know, my heart rate was, the medication would slow my heart rate so it wasn't too rapidly. But in this case, it slowed it down too much. So now this pacemaker is in to keep me from bottoming out.
Wow.
So I'm sort of a bionic man.
Yeah.
And I'm on medication to keep me from going too high, you know.
So, you must have been so shocked by that. Did they think that had anything to do with the heart surgery itself, or was that just one of those things?
It was a function of the medication trying to control the heart rate. And for whatever reason, my heart, I mean, I slow down. I don't full-on meditate, but I spend a lot of time being chill. And for whatever reason, my heart rate is high. You know?
So it went totally opposite. Do you still have AFib and have to be on blood thinners?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Because,
yeah.
I mean, all these things. I mean, you look wonderfully healthy. You're obviously incredibly active. But all these things are perilous, aren't they, John? I mean, really, when you think about what could happen.
Absolutely.
So you're still on all these medications, and no wonder you meditate, because you have to keep yourself centered with...
Well, and I play music, and I play with kids, and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us how this experience may have changed your life in some way, or maybe not. I don't know.
Well, one thing it's done is it's made my children all have to grow up a little faster and made them appreciate me that much more, and maybe vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
But you seem like a really close family before this.
Yeah. Yeah, we are. But I think they were all kind of used to me being just out in the world. And now they really make a point of, like, making sure they get time with me, which is great.
So in that way, it did change your life. Did it make you feel more closely associated with the fragility of life and of your own life, too?
It must have. It must have, although, you know, I'm still living in life in the fast lane.
Uh-huh.
And one of the comments I got from a lot of people was, well, no wonder you have, your heart is just so big, you know. People are very kind to me. But maybe your heart is just too big. And I don't know if I've been putting on the brakes a little bit and trying to keep myself more protected. Yeah. I might be a little bit more guarded than I had been.
Yeah, I would think you'd feel a little bit more vulnerable. I did for a while. I sort of got over that really fast, though.
Yeah,
because life is kind of a harsh place, and you got to keep your guard up in some ways.
Right.
Did this change you at all as an artist? Because I know you write songs, and you're out in the community, obviously having a lot of empathy for people anyway.
I've tried to write about it musically, and it's not revealing itself.
Really?
Yeah. Like, my writing is almost like giving birth. You know, I have to kind of feel something, and then it has to gestate and then happen. And it's sort of an organic thing that comes out whole. You know, the music and the words all kind of happen at once. And I may have not had distance enough from it yet.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what's going on.
Because you obviously cannot still be in denial.
Right.
That you went through this incredible ordeal and came through it. Did it change you in any way spiritually?
It may have. You know, I'm not a religious man. My connections to my closest people are stronger than they have been. And so it's changed me in that way.
Yeah. And tell us what advice you'd have for folks who might actually be going through this.
Right. Well, one thing is to listen when they say, you should probably come back next week and get your blood pressure checked. One is to have somebody, if possible, who will come with you to all appointments.
Yes.
And who will be your second set of ears and your second brain. Those are the two main things. And in my case, and as you were saying before, letting people know what's going on in your larger circles is really important.
Mm. Yeah. And it's weren't you amazed by modern medicine too?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, 100 years ago, you'd be walking around with an IV pole with a pacemaker.
Or not walking around.
Or not
at
walking
all.
Around at all. Yeah. And heart surgeries, they used to stick their finger in. If a valve was clogged up, they didn't know what to do.
Wow.
So modern medicine is the miracle that we've all experienced.
Yeah.
And it does amaze me when I think about it.
Yeah.
Well, John Simon, we're almost out of time. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us. Can you give people some contact information if they want to talk to you or come and listen to some of your music?
Sure.
At some point?
I have johnsimonmusic.com has contact info and has my performing calendar and everything you need to know, including photographs.
Yes, it's a great website.
Thank you.
So yeah, get in touch with John. He's a great performer as well. Thanks again for sharing this with us.
Indeed. Thanks, Trish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outoboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.